Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today, we are going to be talking about alcohol. Everybody thinks, oh, it's on everybody's table. I had a drink on my way home from work. Yeah, we have a few drinks, you know, that were brought into our work. And we say, but I've been doing it since I've been 13 or 14. My elders are still doing it, and they say a drink a day is why they live so long. Wow, what really is alcohol doing to our lives in this day and age? Have we gotten so conditioned that we believe we can drink a beer or wine just as easily as we can drink soda or milk or coffee or tea? And we think about it and we say, it's no big deal, you know. I have a glass of wine with dinner. I'll have a beer with lunch. And in the morning, hey, if it's a weekend, I'm going to have some champagne too. So today we're going to be talking about alcohol in today's society and what is it really doing and how is it affecting our lives. You say it's not affecting your life? Well, today we'll be talking about in ways that it may unconsciously be affecting your life. So today our conversation is all around alcohol and the part it plays in our life, our work, our relationships, our families, and even our body's health. And really, is there something we need to change? Maybe it'll be able to say, I need to look at this, something I might need to change. Today joining us in conversation is Annie Grace. Her book is This Naked Mind, Control Alcohol, Find Freedom, Discover Happiness, and Change Your Life. A lot of big promises there. And people say, alcohol? Oh, I have freedom. It makes me happy. It makes my life great. Can't you see? I have all of these friends, all of these likes, and everything is hunky-dory. Well, is alcohol controlling you, or are you controlling your alcohol? Annie, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a real pleasure to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Jeanette. It's great to be here.
So, Annie, what do you think? Don't you think it's all about who's controlling the alcohol or is the alcohol controlling who, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, in everybody's drinking career, there comes a point where you are no longer in control as you once were. And that's just for the simple reason that alcohol has addictive properties. I mean, there's so many debates over alcohol. Is it good for you? Is it bad for you? But one thing everyone agrees on is that it is addictive. And so not treating it with the caution it deserves can definitely be scary.
It's gotten so easy to be able to drink all the time. And, you know, the only real parameters on regulating it is saying, if you drink too much and you get caught, you'll get a DUI. Other than that, you can always be tethering on that edge of how much is too much and just keep acting out in your life, right?
Yeah, and I think it's almost unfortunate because it's something that we don't really allow that question to come out into the open. I mean, if you and I were sitting down to, you know, some donuts, for instance, we would sit there and we would probably have a chat about how good they tasted, but we would also talk about how much maybe fat or calories or, you know, try to limit ourselves to just one. We'd have a somewhat balanced conversation. But around alcohol, I mean, that conversation just isn't balanced. We'd never sit down, have a drink and say, oh, geez, well, I hope this isn't going to cause cancer or I hope this isn't going to damage my liver. Those sorts of conversations just don't happen. And, you know, it's almost as if you do want to question your drinking, it's really almost shunned in our society. People wonder, oh, do you have a problem? And, you know, it's not encouraged to kind of look at alcohol consciously.
You know, it's the funniest thing. I live here in New Orleans area, and here the donuts are laced with alcohol. You know? Yeah.
Wow.
You know, you can go get a Black Russian. You can go have an Irish cream. You can have a vodka donut. Yeah. And it's incredible when you think about the concept even of that. Could you imagine walking into a workplace where there's donuts on the counter, nothing really said about it, you're assuming it's sugar, and it's really alcohol, and you just sit there and have a few donuts, you know, in the morning, right?
Wow, no, I've never heard of that before. That's crazy.
Yeah, so that's just a perfect example of abuse of the concept, because you're really taking it to another level, and you're saying, hey, all holes are barred. We can do what we want, and we can partake when we want, and we'll just put it in everything. You know, I think even the concept we see today, you know, with all of these food shows on television, they're constantly putting wine in everything. They're putting, hey, put a little bourbon in your chili, you know, or cook your chicken with beer, you know, and all these other concepts. And the idea is gosh, people have to have stuff in their house in the first place, and now they're adding it to their food, and on top of even just drinking it, it's really getting, there are no limits anymore, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, people do say maybe the alcohol cooks off or whatnot, but who's to know? And it'd just be surprising if we did that with any other substance. I mean, from prescription drugs to illegal drugs, you know, we just treat alcohol so differently, despite the fact that it's actually responsible for twice the amount of all illegal and prescription drug overdoses combined just in 2015. We completely give it a free pass, which is what, you know, with my research, I find so baffling in society.
You know, it's funny you say it cooks off. Well, the concept is it's about our unconscious mind that's really perpetuating in this whole process. So if our unconscious mind says, hey, I popped the top off the bottle, I smelled it, I know what it looks like, I have it in the house all the time, whether we're putting it in food or putting it in glass, we're really still, quote, partaking. And, you know, when we think about it, the idea of putting marijuana in brownies was something that was so, that was another time when, you know, a drug was slipped into food. And it got caught and picked up where people said, you know, that's probably not the best thing to be doing. But here with alcohol, we just don't even, it doesn't even ding a bell in our head.
Yeah, no, it's so true. We treat alcohol completely separately from everything else. There was an article recently and it said, what if we treated alcohol like we did other drugs? And then it went on to just, and it was actually in New Orleans. And it went on to just sort of make this case about, you know, look at what these people are doing. They're on the street. They're puking. They're ruining their relationships. They're getting in cars. They're, you know, all of these things. And it was this really scary sounding article and all truth, of course. But it just made the point that we don't hear articles like that about alcohol. You know, we can talk all day about the heroin epidemic when, you know, deaths from heroin are in the 10,000 people range per year, but deaths from alcohol are upwards of 88,000 per year. And still, you know, we just turn completely a blind eye and we give it a free pass. And, you know, Dr. Jeanette, I would say that that probably has a lot to do with advertising and how it's marketed and how it's made so socially acceptable, all things which, as you say, deeply influence our unconscious.
Because our society has said that it's okay. I will tell you, if alcohol went away, just even in the parameters of the city of New Orleans, the economy would tank like nobody's business, and people would scatter like red ants, like nobody's business, to get out of Dodge. Because it's so ingrained in the people, the society, the restaurants, the businesses, the grocery stores, the doctors that treat it, all the way around. I mean, we're also known as the number one area to go for liver transplant. Well, no kidding. You know, you know, people, I think the disassociation that alcohol is a problem is the biggest a lie that the society has perpetuated. You know, we will say, oh, but a little this, then a little of that, and, you know, hey, a drunk comes through the kitchen door, and the first thing the kids do is they run up and grab him and give him a hug, and they're PO'd about work, and they've tanked to no end. What's the first thing the person does is takes out his arm and just swings at the kids. Well, let's talk about those things, you know. It's the things that hide in the secrets of our lives that are really keeping us bound up with this concept with alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, the statistics around, you know, child abuse are just heartbreaking. You know, 7 out of 10 cases of child abuse are alcohol is involved. So that's 70%. And so you think of the effect that, you know, this legal drug has on children. And it really is heartbreaking because, I mean, there's nothing worse than being a child and seeing one of your parents drunk. It's almost as if they're absent. You know, you no longer can mm-hmm. trust them with your well-being because they're not acting like an adult anymore. They're acting like a child. And at a minimum, that's terrifying. But as you say, I mean, even more so, there's so much actual physical abuse and emotional abuse that comes directly from the bottle. Because it does, you know, it allows our anger to flow in a way that it truly shouldn't flow naturally.
I think it really takes the trap door off the cellar. It just kind of lets it flow. In other words, mm-hmm. you try to hold down that which is going on inside of you. And once the alcohol has let that door open, people really just spew their hatred, anger, pity, sadness, grief, fear, whatever's on inside them that they're not dealing with on those around them. And that's really a dangerous place to be.
And I think it's really scary, too, because often, you know, you were saying earlier that it happens where we just have a drink here and there and we think it's fine in moderation and we assume that, you know, we're not going to become alcoholics because we've held up alcoholics as these almost different breed of people, almost a different race, and we assume it's something mm-hmm. genetic or something inherent in the alcoholic that has them become an alcoholic. We don't take a look and say, well, actually, you know, in truth and scientifically, it's the addictive nature of alcohol that the right level of exposure over time and the right quantities, anybody can develop, you know, a tolerance and an emotional attachment, a physiological attachment, and a physical dependence on alcohol, to the point where they're making and doing things that they wouldn't otherwise be doing. And suddenly it's at that moment where you realize this is a problem is where you're really stuck, because it's at that moment that you are addicted. And addictions aren't, you know, simple to overcome in many instances. It takes work and it takes awareness. And with alcohol, we almost allow it to go that far because we don't allow for questioning before, because at least for myself, when I was drinking heavily, I had a friend who had gone to AA. And since we were drinking buddies, I sort of asked her, I said, well, wait, do you think, you know, I have a problem? Like, should I be stopping? Like, you know, asking the questions mm-hmm. because I had this level of concern. And she looked at me and she said, you know what, Annie, I've been different my whole life. I think I was born this way. I'm an alcoholic. And so it kind of gave me this free pass in my mind to say, okay, well, I guess I'm not. And, you know, alcohol is still affecting me pretty negatively at that point in time. And I continued drinking in excess for 6 years after that before I really realized that it was something I no longer wanted to be doing and started doing the work to get out of the addiction. But, you know, we don't allow questioning around alcohol. We don't allow the idea that maybe, you know, maybe this is becoming too much, because we tend to blame the person, the alcoholic, rather than the substance, the addictive alcohol.
You know, here in the South, a lot of times they will have on a Friday afternoon or sometimes on Wednesdays at noon, they will go and have a business lunch is what they call it. And it starts around 11 o'clock in the morning. And it's always centered around some place that has, well, let's put it this way, every place here has alcohol, so they don't have to worry about that. And what they do is they go in and they have something to eat and they have a few drinks, and you think, are they going back to work? The answer is usually not, but many times yes. But really, what is the concept about that? The idea is that you may have a person at the table who will drink through this lunch and then go and have their afternoon drink and then maybe go to work the next day and they're hungover or whatever, and everybody accepts it as okay. Or people come into work and they're totally tanked and you say, ah, just give them some coffee and they'll be okay. And people don't want to say anything to a workplace employee or a boss or anyone in that their work at their workplace because they don't want to be labeled as the person that's saying something or the person that's pointing fingers because they may in their own life be having a drink every night in the privacy of their own home. Or they may just have a different circle of friends that they're getting totally plastered with and the two circles don't intersect. So they don't really want to have that out there that they might be doing the same thing too. So really what it is that everybody's afraid to say anything to anyone about alcohol because they also know that's judging them, but they also know they in turn will turn around and judge them. So no one really wants to take on the responsibility of taking care of themselves and be able to step up and say, this is not what I'm going to do, and say to others, this is not what I'm going to do, and standing in your own power can therefore have others say, maybe I should not drink also. Just like you did, that friend stood in her power, and you just observed it, and you were able to say, it's something I need to look at. Yet so many people don't want to do that. They just want to constantly judge or feel judged but run in fear of it all.
Yeah, and I think you've hit on something that's really integral to the struggle is that when you do decide you want to stop drinking or you want to get off the alcohol train, you know, it's not met with the nicest reactions, especially from the people you've been drinking with. And I think you're exactly right in the sense that it's met with some sense of, wait, what? Why are you doing that? And who are you? And are you boring? And that's no fun. And, you know, all of these things that probably stem from a level of insecurity with the amount that they're drinking as well. But nobody wants to be the first one to sort of stop because we are so judgmental of people who stop drinking. I mean, alcohol is the only drug on earth that you have to justify not doing. And, you know, if you stop smoking cigarettes or if you stop using pot or whatever else, you're kind of, oh, good for you, good job. But if you stop drinking, you're looked at as a bit of a social pariah and you stop being invited to things. People feel like you're judging them, even if you are not judging them at all. You know, they feel like they won't be able to drink around you. You know, people apologize to me like, are you okay? Are you sure it's fine if I have a drink? And you know, just because I'm not choosing to put that in my body anymore doesn't mean that I'm carrying what you put in your body. But, you know, the instant reaction is a lack of the kinship that, you know, supposedly drinking provided. And it's really hard to strike out on your own and be the only one. I went into it thinking, oh, well, this is my life. This is my decision. This is my choice. This won't be a big deal. My friends will be understanding. And it was a pretty rude awakening to be at some of those work lunches you're talking about and not be ordering and, you know, or order an iced tea and just have the stares, you know, people looking at you like, wait, what? What are you doing? Why aren't you drinking? And, you know, even some pretty intrusive questions. And then just stop getting invited to those things because you weren't the one drinking. And I think from a career perspective, that's hardest. I mean, they say in some regards, you know, work gets done on the golf course. I think now it's that work gets done at the bar. And so if you're not partaking or imbibing, you know, you stop getting invited to the bar. And that can be somewhat damaging to your career, which is just so heartbreaking that it's all tied up like this.
Are you feeling despair or overwhelmed by your health or everyday life situations? Do you know what questions to ask and how to get help? Don't go it alone. Ask for help. Dr. Jeanette offers compassionate and comprehensive advocate support for health challenges. To download her free report, How to Get the Healthcare You Deserve, go to her website, www.drjeanettewellness.com. Anyone who downloads the information tonight will receive a complimentary 15-minute personal needs analysis consult with Dr. Gallagher for questions and answers. That website again for the free report download and free consult is www.drjeanettewellness.com. Just reach out and ask for help.
And, you know, there's even been a lot of social events that occur, and the tickets are astronomical, and you go, why are they so high? And you, if you happen to be on a panel or a board that is putting together some of these functions, the very first conversation is what kind of alcohol are we going to have? You know, which level, 1, 2, or 3, the best kind, you know, the mediocre, or the kind you can buy in the grocery store? And what type wines are we going to provide or not? And that influences how much that ticket to that function is going to cost. So sometimes if you're going and, you know, you're knowing that the bar is always open kind of idea, you're paying $200-$300 for that ticket. And you're saying, but I'm just going to go to drink water. And I really, it gets to be to the point where maybe you're best not being at those functions, because you know everyone you're going to talk to is already going to be drunk or whatever, or drinking enough to be able to come up to the cost of their ticket. I've seen people, they will only go to functions if there's free booze. And it's just, I will not say that this is in all areas of the country, because I've lived in many areas of the country where they were dry counties. Alcohol was not at a restaurant, you know. You could not buy it in the grocery store. If you stopped to get gas, you couldn't pick up a pint, you know. Or if you went to get fast food, you couldn't have gotten a frozen gallon to take with you. Yet here, that's the way it is. And I think it's really all depends on your situations once you want to stop drinking alcohol. Do you need to change your family and your friends for a while? Do you need to change your job? Do you need to change where you're living? Hey, this is not the best place for a non-alcoholic to live. Absolutely not. You know, no way. And so the, maybe a dry county for a while is probably a better place for you, where you won't feel that it's in your face all the time. Because when you're stopping drinking alcohol, having it in your face all the time does not make you stronger. It just kind of makes you PO'd sometimes. It's many people, it will derail you quicker. Some people, it will help you get so frustrated and so out of control that you just can't seem to get back into control, and you'll drink even more in the rebound.
Yeah, and I think it really has a lot to do with how you quit as well, because I think most often, you know, our method of quitting is really about, okay, well, I'm just going to kind of white knuckle it, and I'm going to just deprive myself of this thing that I still desire, because I know that my life will ultimately be better without it, and because alcohol is affecting me to such a negative degree that I'm just going to, you know, kind of go on a massive alcohol diet for as long as I can. And I'm going to hope that eventually this desire to drink, to fit in, to, you know, relax with alcohol, whatever, goes away. And that can be a really long, hard road with a lot of pain. You know, I've sort of discovered this other way where you really try to train your unconscious to no longer desire alcohol. And you do that by uncovering your unconscious desires and really bringing them into conscious light. So as an example, you know, when I stopped drinking, I deeply believed that alcohol was key to relaxing at the end of a long day. And I thought it was really important for de-stressing and for dealing with, you know, the stress of my big career and all of these things. And when I looked into the truth of that, when I really said, okay, is that true? It turns out that that's not actually true. They've even done a study in 2 sets of rats where they had rats exposed to alcohol and rats not exposed to alcohol over a month. And then they put them into this course where they were, you know, stressors were presented to them. And the rats who were regularly drinking were much less equipped to deal with the everyday stress. And, you know, that's definitely true in humans. Overall, I'm much less stressed not drinking than, you know, constantly beating my body up with the alcohol and the hangovers and the questions and the regret and all of these things. But look at it. So in order to flip your mind and say, oh, actually, alcohol is not relaxing me, and actually I'll live a more relaxed, more fulfilled life without it, then you flip your thinking to where you get these unconscious desires for alcohol out, and you no longer want it. And then it becomes much easier. So then it becomes much more of a kind of freedom path than a deprivation path.
Yeah, I think so many times that we have said on this radio show before is that which holds you or binds you, or that which you're hiding, such as a secret or keeping inside of you, if you can turn over the stone and let it breathe the air of the day, let the sun shine on it, let it be watered and grow into its full bloom, you can actually see, is this something I should be fearing? Is this something that has more power over me? Is this something I can change in my life? And then the fear, the power will start to dissipate over time, because you will realize inside of you in that darkness, it really seems like a big thing, because you're thinking about it all the time and it's constantly on your mind, and you constantly try to drink it down or take pills to hold it down or whatever that might be. And eventually, if you just plain let it loose, you'll realize you can change the way it has power over you. And I think that's the most important thing.
I think that's exactly right. And it's about bringing it out and, like you say, exposing it to the daylight. Because when you are drinking, when you realize that alcohol is not making you happy anymore, I mean, a lot of your drinking life, at least I'll speak from my own experience, I went through it kind of with a lot of ignorance, just not really knowing how bad it was for me, not really knowing the toll it was taking on me. And then when I reached a point in my life where I said, okay, I don't want to be doing this as much, you know, it becomes this pretty dark and scary place, because on one side of the equation is, all right, well, if I stop, I'm going to be missing out. I'm going to be leaving behind my crutch for relaxation. I'm not going to have as much fun socially, you know. But on the other side is this fear of, but I'm damaging my health, and, you know, long-term, this is not good for me. I know I'm drinking more over time. I'm building a pretty serious tolerance to this. And so both sides of this internal struggle are dominated by fear. And you really have to bring both sides of that fear to light in order to really realize the truth. And the truth is that there was a point in your life when you didn't need alcohol, you know, when it wasn't important, when it wasn't vital to relaxing or to socializing. And that's still true today. And I think that's the message, is that we don't actually need it. You know, we just think we do. And we don't need it to have a good time. We don't need it to have really deep belly laughs or to have peace and joy in our lives. We don't need it to relax. We don't need it to sleep better. You know, all of these things were just created by the addictive nature, that we start to believe that we need it for those things because we've been drinking in every social situation. So we don't imagine a social situation without alcohol. So we imagine that it would be boring. And guess what? If you go to a social situation and you feel deprived, like you want to drink, but you're not allowing yourself to, yes, you're going to be miserable because you're going to be wanting something and pining over something the whole time. And then we translate that misery into, well, I knew it. Alcohol was what's important about having fun. When the reality is, if you just flip your mindset to, I don't have to be poisoning myself. I don't have to be part of the herd. I don't have to be part of the groupthink around alcohol. I actually am a really free whole person without it. And then you go to this social function and you just look around and you say, wow, I'm glad that I'm not going to be hungover tomorrow. I'm glad that I'm putting myself first. And it becomes this really empowering thing.
Yeah, it sure does. You know, especially when you see the people the next day, if you go to this event, you can stand there as the observer and watch all of these people and how they interact. And you will realize and pick up on certain things that are going on, like, gosh, that guy is with that person they really shouldn't be. Or, gosh, he just fell over the steps. Did you see that? Or, oh, where has he been? He's been in the bathroom throwing up the whole time. Or, and then the next day you see them, and they're totally unable to be productive the next day because they're so hungover. And if you step back and you look at it, is all of those patterns great? Or is the pattern, I'm standing here, I'm watching this, I'm healthy myself. I'm having something to eat. I'm at a function. I'm having a good time. I'll get up in the morning and I won't have that blasted headache and be trying to scramble to find some way to get rid of it so that I can work for the day. Or do I have to concoct a really big excuse because I know I'm not going to be able to work tomorrow? And, oh my gosh, I have to, you start thinking in your head, well, I'm going to have to find a ride home because I don't want the DUI because then blah, blah, blah. Your head has this train. It just never, ever ends. And I think with drinking, you've got this train that never stops. And you've gotten so used to that train that it's just on automatic remote. You know, about all of the fear, the pain, the problems, the issues, and everything, that you've almost incorporated it as it's yourself. It's who you are. And for people that have started drinking early in their lives, they've really held up themselves as, this is a part of me, it's always been, and you've created this outward appearance of yourself. And when you want to stop drinking, all of a sudden that outward appearance says, who the hell do you think you are? You can't, I'm the outward appearance. I am who you are. You can't let me go. And yet your inner person is saying, this is not what I want. I need to shed this. And that shedding process for many will be rather difficult, in different levels. But their shedding process for some may be quite easy if you just turn it around and say, I am not that outer person. I'm this inner person, and that can dissolve. And that's a pretty, it's a great place to think about, but I will tell you the work to get there for some is pretty long haul, and it's not something you can do overnight. It's really something that takes a great deal of time, a great deal of work, concentration, commitment, follows through, and also to say, I might have a relapse and I can still get back on the same path. All of these parameters, it's really what it takes to shake that outer shell.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, with the right techniques, it's pretty easy to recondition your unconscious mind to no longer desire alcohol. And that's just through looking at all the reasons you do drink and then really exploding those myths one by one, which is one of the things I do in my book with liminal thinking. And liminal, of course, is the space between your conscious and your subliminal mind. But as you say, if you're self-medicating with alcohol, if you're covering something up, if you are hiding from yourself and you are using alcohol as a way to address a symptom, you have to address the cause of that symptom. Otherwise, you will look to something else to self-medicate, or you will just continue drinking because you won't be able to deal with the reality of whatever it is. And I think a lot of people do that. A lot of people use alcohol and other drugs and substances in general much more extensively than probably is healthy for them because they're trying to address a symptom of something else, and something else is going on, and they're drinking to cover it up. And drinking, it does. It slows down your brain function and your senses' ability to respond to your brain. So in essence, it kind of puts you in this bubble, in this cocoon, where you don't feel as much, in the immediate sense. But if you look at it objectively, and I think it's so interesting when people say, well, some alcohol is good for you, just because how possibly is something good for you that makes you physically ill after consuming it? Mm-hmm. I mean, that just to me is just the most black and white description of something not being good for you. Our bodies right. know what they're doing. And if your body has to go through this literal illness in order to purge the toxins out of your body with a hangover or headaches, I just don't understand how we can logically assume that drinking is in any way good for us.
Yeah, I think they say it's good for the pain, it's good for sadness, it's good for grief, it's good for stress, it's good for a release, when really it's just, sometimes it's just decoding upon everything. If we're having grief, let us have the grief instead of trying to stop it up with things like medications or pills or alcohol. And go through the grief instead of holding it back, because all it'll do is fester and become something else. so many times people can't understand when they have a really significant health concern or health issue, and they say, but I've been healthy all along. And you look at them and you say, how are you saying you're healthy all along when you're drinking, you're taking recreational drugs, you act out and you have anger episodes, and your life sometimes is in shambles, you know? And, you know, but they say, oh, but I'm still healthy. How, all you've really done is kind of like taken things, pushed them down, and they will sprout out in something else. I always think it's something like a pressure pot, you know? Eventually it's going to blow a gasket, and if you stop that one up, it's going to blow another gasket somewhere else. So things will eventually eke out until they show up in a really big, significant issue. You know, it could be cancer, it could be a stroke, it could be a heart attack. Alcohol brings on all of these things. We just choose not to say that it's related, right?
At this time, we're going to take a short break, as I'd like to share a product that I've been taking since December 2015, and I really feel the benefits every day. I'm sharing it because I really believe we need to start taking a few steps to improve our own health without waiting for someone to always tell us what to do. With heart and blood vessel complications these days, I really believe it's high on my list of what to take today. And so I hope you take a minute to check out the link following the Cardio Miracle information.
Attention all women over 50 who are feeling listless and tired. Are you constantly hitting a wall? Are your day-to-day activities wearing you out? We have great news. Take control of your health and empower your body with a new exclusive formula of vital nutrients and antioxidants. Our product, Cardio Miracle, is an alternative health option that can improve your general health and give you that much-needed natural energy so you can accomplish everything on your to-do list without feeling exhausted. Cardio Miracle can help you to have the energy and power you need to deal with all the lumps, bumps, and general chaos of life. It's called Cardio Miracle because it improves your heart health while giving you natural energy and important vitamins and nutrients your body craves. Statistics tell us women are at a high risk for a cardiac event. Please inform yourself as options are available. Discover more about this new product at cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette, spelled all in lowercase, DrJeanette. Thousands of women like yourself, including Dr. Jeanette, have blessed their bodies and their hearts with the restorative power of Cardio Miracle. Learn more at cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette. That's cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you hit on something really important is that, you know, if you're self-medicating and you're just addressing the symptom, I mean, by definition, a medicine that is actually healing should make itself irrelevant over time. You should be able to take it, it should heal the problem,
yeah.
And then eventually you stop taking it. And alcohol clearly does not do that. It actually moves in and sets up camp and builds a tolerance, which, you know, a tolerance in effect is an immunity. It's your body's way of saying, okay, I need to stabilize myself. I need to maintain homeostasis. So I'm going to put out counter chemicals in order to counteract the toxins here and the negative things that are happening in order to help you survive this poison. And a tolerance is just an immunity to the toxin of alcohol. And so you build up this tolerance and, you know, the opposite of it, alcohol making itself irrelevant as any true medicine should, it actually digs in and ensures that you become addicted to it. And then when you want to stop it, it's just not that simple because you've actually changed some patterns inside of your brain and inside of your physical body to where that alcohol has moved in and taken up residence, so to speak.
And, you know, it's interesting you said that about medicine because so many times we look at people on prescriptions and, you know, especially the elderly, I find this all the time. You can go into their home and you can ask, look at their table and you can ask them what other medications they have and they'll bring out this big box or bag and you start going through them And there's things with old dates on there or old doctors they never see. Or there's things in there that they just keep refilling because they go to the pharmacist. And, you know, when an elder person goes to the pharmacist, you just call up, you say, just refill my prescriptions. You drive up or you walk in and they give you a big bag. Whatever has refills under your name is what you're going to get. And yet they don't even, you know, and they look at it and they say, well, we're taking all these drugs. They don't even know what they're for. So really not medications in many times does not cure anything. It's just holding back the symptoms so that you can be able to get to the next day. And a lot of times we say, what is the gateway drug? Is the gateway drug you've had alcohol first or you've had drugs first? Many times now people are saying the gateway drug to heroin is when kids are getting their wisdom teeth taken out and they're getting Vicodin, you know, when you're 16, 17, and 18 years old. Another gateway drug is if you've had alcohol in the house, well, don't little kids walk around and drink what's left in the glass? It all looks the same. Vodka looks the same as water if you're a kid. So really these ideas of seeing things and having them out there and available, once it started, you're just saying, ooh, that felt good. I want that again. Everybody wants that feel-good sense. I know for myself, you know, when I had kidney surgery, I had morphine because I was in the hospital for 3.5 weeks, and that was a pretty tough thing. But what I do remember with morphine, it was a place that was just, it was pure bliss, you know? Your body didn't hurt, your head didn't hurt, your mind shut off, and you just felt in the zone. You know, and when you look back at that, you say, wow, wouldn't we always want to live in that space? A lot of people want to live in that space. You know, that's why they're looking at marijuana. It puts you in that space of bliss. But do you want to have that in your everyday life is a different story. So is the drug the bliss or is your life bliss? I think that's really what you're saying throughout your whole book. Again, the book is This Naked Mind, Control Alcohol. And it's really, which is the bliss? Is the bliss the medication, the altered state, or is the or is the bliss your reality?
Yep, exactly. I think you've hit it on the head. And I think that, you know, so often we're almost conditioned to believe that we need something else. I mean, we see advertisements for if you're just skinnier or if you had more hair or if you got better, you know, job, and we're just always looking for something external. And the truth of it, you know, as you and I both have come to realize, is really there's nothing external that's going to give you that lasting bliss. It really has to come from inside. And when you take the alcohol away, you can start that journey in a way that you could never do when you were continuously drinking in order to numb the feelings, you know, the true feelings that you have.
You know, I think it's absolutely incredible now that women are starting to have sippy cups so they could have wine with their kids, you know, or water bottles. If you go and get a bottle of water at this local store here, it's the plastic is made in the shape of a clear plastic flask so that you drink the water and then you're supposed to, and then you're able to refill it with vodka and no one would know the difference. Because on the outside it says so-and-so water, you know? And so really there's been ways to say, just slip it into your life. It's almost like the slippery snake, you know? It always shows up wherever. And when you're having, I know for myself, we get turtle soup all the time. And you've got to have sherry with it because, in effect, it does not taste like anything without it. And probably I think, you know, 2-3 times a year, that's mine. I'll have sherry in the turtle soup because it doesn't taste like anything. It just tastes like tomato base, you know. But so many times things just slide in and we don't even recognize it anymore that it seems to be so common, you know.
And I think it is really just about bringing it back into the conversation. You know, it's not necessarily about saying all alcohol is horrible and bad and demonizing it. It's just about bringing it back into our conscious awareness because, you know, I unconsciously drank for many years and, you know, we're not having a balanced conversation about it in our society anymore. And we're not having a balanced conversation about it in terms of parenting. I mean, there's wine bottles that are called mommy juice, you know, but it's specifically right. at that stressed out mom of new kids saying, hey, it's not drinking alone if the kids are home. And so you get this idea that it's,
yeah.
it's okay, and it does. It slips in, and it ruins everything good in your life, ultimately, when you let it get too much of a hold. But if you stop for a second and start to become conscious again about it, about what it really is, about what it can really do, and treat it sort of with the fearsome respect that any addictive substance deserves, then we can overcome so much of that harm. And it can be used in a way that maybe it was intended to be used, which is not, you know, getting plastered and throwing up and beating up your kids, you know. And mm-hmm. there's probably a place for alcohol, but, you know, what we've done with it is just pretty bad.
You know, I've even seen women play groups where there would be a meeting of women and their kids, and, you know, they would call them an elegant tea, and the women would have fancy wine glasses, and the kids would have their little teacups. And they'd be 2-3 hours, you know, drinking into this afternoon. And then the parents, the mothers, would get in their car and drive their kids wherever they were going next. And yet, if you turn around and you look at it, and you would say to your 16, 17, 18-year-old kids, if you've had some alcohol to drink, don't drive. Yet you just turn around and do it all the time. And I think, and as I said before about what is the gateway drug, I think right there is the gateway drug, is that you don't want to be a hypocrite. You do it all the time. You've done it all the time, and you don't want that secret to be uncovered that you are a hypocrite. You've done it, and you know, and you're not going to tell your kids not to do it because you've done it. And same thing with parents who are now having alcohol parties. If you all want to drink, you can come over here, and you could drink here, and then you have to stay overnight. You know, or if you're going to drink, I'm going to get you a party bus. So everybody come meet at the party bus. And then after they get off the party bus and they're tanked, they get in their cars and they drive home. Really? You know, and we are so, sometimes I think we're brain dead. I really do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of like, how dare you deny or not pay attention that that's not the way it's supposed to play out. And we've given so many excuses to alcohol in our life. I think that it has imprinted us so much that people just don't, it doesn't even faze them anymore. And I think that's a tough place to be, don't you?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. We've just stopped thinking, really. We've stopped thinking, and we need to start thinking again, because the trajectory we're on, more people died of alcohol last year than in the last 35 years. So it's becoming a crisis, and, you know, it's, unfortunately, crisis is where people start to wake up and start to use their brains again. It's unfortunate that it has to come to this, but I do think these conversations will start to come out a bit more as more and more people start to see the truly negative impact that alcohol has. I mean, nobody doesn't have a story of tragedy. You know, my cousin was hit and killed by a drunk driver, and you don't talk to a single person who doesn't have a similar story of heartache and pain when it comes to, you know, our most used and accepted drug. And I think we do need to start thinking again. And I guess that's my main plea. It's not about, you know, rules. It's not about demonizing it. It's just about starting to think and using our brains when it comes to this substance.
And I think my main message is be responsible for yourself, because if you do not believe that you affect or have effects on other people, just throw a rock into a pond and tell me if that affected the water all the way out across the lake. You know, people are so much into their silos that I'm this glass shell and all of my effects stay within me, and they don't. So even if you're just walking past someone, they can smell the alcohol, you've affected them. If you walk past someone and you bump into them, you've then disturbed them and you've affected them. If you are sitting down and yelling at a waitress because she isn't bringing the drinks fast enough, you're affecting the whole restaurant. So really be more responsible for yourself and how in this world that you've really created this thing that is constantly spewing out, hey, I'm not right, this is what I want, I'm commanding, and really find a place that you can just be at peace and be within yourself. And really, that's what you and I have said this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
tough place to be these days, you know, especially when alcohol is so prevalent. Well, Annie, it was a great talking to you today. I really think that you and I have given people a really idea that to look at themselves. What are they sitting down to today? Take 24 hours. How many drinks have you had in 24 hours? Take 5 days or 7 days. Count them up and say, what were they for and what do they really accomplish? And here's a week later and I have the same situation again. So what did the alcohol really do, right?
Exactly.
Well, Annie, would you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you and to purchase your book? That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Dr. Jeanette. Please come to thisnakedmind.com, and you can download the first 40 pages of the book free, have a read, see if it's something for you, and then it's available on Amazon. And I really appreciate your time. It was wonderful to be here.
Well, thank you so much, Annie, because I think that you and I both, by sharing our stories and our thoughts, that will maybe stir something in someone. And even if they don't quit today or tomorrow, or if they see someone else who might need their help, it will turn that rock over and it'll take time, but they'll be able to make a change. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
If you'd like to find out more information about the book, again, it is called This Naked Mind, Control Alcohol. The link is on the bottom of today's show page. You can click on there and go directly to Annie Grace's website. Thank you so much for joining us today, and have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.